Welcome to Gemara Markings. Today's shiur is Be'o Daf Chof Vov. Don't forget to click on the Daf option in order to view a marked Daf Gemara for today's shiur. If you're not fully familiar with our Gemara marking system and wish to benefit from its great rewards, it is essential that you study all of the introductory material accessed by clicking on the Learn the System option provided on the sidebar of our homepage. If you're already partially familiar, you will benefit by clicking on the brief formatted introduction that is available here. Being that our system is a visual approach to the Daf Gemara, it is recommended that you print out the marked Daf Gemara before the shiur. If you wish to be in touch with us, we can be reached at gmarkings@gmail.com. Today's shiur begins from the bottom line of Daf Chof Hei Omid Beis at the beginning of the Mishnah. Before we learn the actual text, let's glance at the side where we have our topic heading, the Nosei, and note that this is a very long topic by way of Gemara length. We will be in this topic till Daf Chof Zayin Omid Beis. The topic heading, Re'ias Mumin Shel Bechor B'Yom Tov, the checking out on the part of an expert of a blemish of a Bechor. A Bechor is a firstborn kosher variety animal. In the time of the Beis HaMikdash, a firstborn animal was given to the Kohen, and a Kohen would then bring it to the Beis HaMikdash as a sacrifice, and he was entitled to eat of the meat. This was one of the Matnos Kahuna, one of the different gifts that the Torah accounts for that are given to Kohanim. Nowadays, that there is no Beis HaMikdash, in view of the fact that a Bechor is holy, it's Kodosh, it has Kedusha, and its Kedusha, its holiness, is not something that people impose upon it, but rather it happens on its own by virtue of the fact that it is a firstborn male animal. So it has sanctity, but we don't have a Beis HaMikdash, unfortunately, in which to offer the Bechor sacrifice. So what do we do with such an animal? So all that can be done is we wait till it develops a blemish, and once it develops a blemish, it's not fit to be offered as a sacrifice. It is then given to a Kohen, and it is his to do with. I'm not going to say as he wants, because there still are restrictions. Nevertheless, it can be slaughtered and eaten. The Bechor, therefore, Bizman Hazeh, until it, Bizman Hazeh means nowadays, without a Beis HaMikdash, until it develops this blemish, a permanent type blemish, it is not fit. You can't do anything with it. Therefore, to bring it into Yom Tov terms, until the blemish is established to be a permanent blemish by an expert in blemish analysis, a mumche, as he is referred to in Hebrew, so it is unfit, and therefore, in terms of Yom Tov, it has no value. Let us say, then, we come across a Bechor, and it develops a permanent blemish on Yom Tov, and an expert would rule that it is a blemish that warrants its slaughtering outside the Beis HaMikdash. Would you be able to use that on Yom Tov? After all, when Yom Tov set in, namely at Bein HaShmoshos, at dusk, the day before, when Yom Tov was setting in, it wasn't accessible. The Bechor was unfit for you. It didn't have the permanent blemish. So, being that at the entrance of Yom Tov, at the ushering in of Yom Tov, it was not available for your personal benefit, the fact that on Yom Tov a blemish is discovered and ruled upon doesn't make it available to you, certainly if you hold from the dinim of muktzeh. Muktzeh means that it is set aside, hasn't been prepared. Therefore, if upon the entrance of Yom Tov, as we said, it wasn't available, and you subscribe to the laws of Muktzeh, this Bechor will not be available, won't be fit for you. That is a very general outline. There are details, there are some additional deos, opinions of Tanoim, that we will be exposed to as we go through this rather long sugya. So as far as the additional details are concerned, let's wait for the Gemara itself as we go along. Now, as we said, we're at the Mishnah at the bottom of Daf Chof Hamid Beis. Bechor Shenofal Lebor, a firstborn male animal, Bizman HaZeh nowadays, that had fallen into a pit, and the owner is afraid it might die over there. Rabbi Yehuda Omer, Yeireid Mumche Vire. A mumche, an expert, can descend into the pit, an expert regarding mumim, regarding blemishes, and he would be capable of ruling whether the blemish is a blemish worthy to have it slaughtered. Again, we're emphasizing nowadays, and slaughtered means for your personal consumption. And as we said earlier, only if it has a permanent type blemish will it be fit for your use, at least for giving to a Kohen, and the Kohen would slaughter it and use it. So Rabbi Yehuda says, it's now Yom Tov, an expert can descend into the pit into which this Bechor had fallen, Vira, and look at it. We continue at the top of Chof Vav Amud Aleph. Im yesh boy mum yale v'yishchot. If it has a blemish on it, so it can be raised from the bottom of the pit and slaughtered. V'im lav, if it doesn't have the required blemish, lo yishchot. And now Rashi introduces a very important point for our understanding with regard to the realm of Muktzeh. We just read Rebbe Yehuda, and it's well known that Rebbe Yehuda subscribes to the restrictions of Muktzeh, which means that if something is not accessible to you, and it's not prepared, it's not something you had in mind upon the entrance of the day, so it doesn't matter what happens during the day of Yom Tov itself, it's not mutter, it's not allowed, it's Muktzeh, because it wasn't fit at the entrance of the day. Now, when Rebbe Yehuda speaks about checking out the blemish, it must be a situation where the Muktzeh issue isn't going to come up. Well, how could that be? We said that the Mumche went into the bor to check it out on Yom Tov itself. What was going on at the entrance of Yom Tov as we were ushering in the holy day? So Rashi at the top adds, Im yesh bo mum al korchach Rebbe Yehuda Muktzeh islay. We are forced, because we know Rebbe Yehuda's shita, we know his opinion, we're forced to say that within Rebbe Yehuda, who holds from Muktzeh, uvamum hanoifel bo biyom tov lo shari, if we were talking here about a blemish that had fallen upon the animal, had arisen, had emerged on Yom Tov proper, lo shari, he would not have allowed it. The lav daitilu me esmol, the owner's mind is not on the animal, after all. Upon the entrance of the holiday, it was a blemish-free firstborn animal, which has sanctity, and hence no accessibility to us. V'hochi ko'omar, b'chor she'balm. What we have to say then is that the Mishnah is speaking about a b'chor, firstborn male animal, that had some type of blemish on it before the entrance of the holiday. Shelohir e'u l'chochomibod yom la'tiro. The only lacking here is that it had not been shown to an expert to give the official stamp of approval, of permission. The nofal lebor biyom tov, and it fell into the pit on Yom Tov. Yeireid mum chavire mum shohoyabol esmoil. Imum kavuahu yalev yishchot. Mishum de muktzaleko. Here is the important point, and we've dashed underlined the word esmoil because that's the critical factor. This animal had some type of blemish on it before Yom Tov. So that alleviates the muktzah problem. The me'esmol daite luya, from already before Yom Tov, the owner's mind was on it. He knew about it. He had planned to eat it based on this mum, if it would be declared to be a permanent type mum by the mumche. We continue in the Mishnah. Rabbi Shimon Omer, and here is a bit of an irony. Rabbi Shimon, in the realm of Muktza, generally speaking, is more lenient. What does Rabbi Shimon say over here? Kol Shein Mumo Nikar Mibod Yom, any animal whose blemish wasn't obvious from before Yom Tov, that means it had not received the approval of the expert from before Yom Tov, Ein ze min hamuchan. It is not considered prepared and available for your use. And we must emphasize, this restriction of Rabbi Shimon is not because of muktzah. Rabbi Shimon doesn't hold for muktzah. So what is the restriction? The restriction is that it had not been judged upon before Yom Tov. The heter, the stamp of approval in this case, was given on Yom Tov proper. And Rashi says, where we've dashed underline, you can look in the Rashi, let's look at it together on the fourth narrow line, Elolafisha Matiro B'Yom Tov, Nira Kemisakno. The problem here is that you're issuing a ruling on Yom Tov, and it appears by issuing a ruling that makes it now accessible as if you are Misakno, you're fixing it. You are taking it from a state of inaccessibility to a state of permission. That's called tikkun. And tikkun is something that when it comes, let us say, to vessels or to structures, that would be an isur d'oraisa. It would be in the realm of one of the malachas known as makeh b'patish, of a completion of something. You're completing it in the sense that now you're making it accessible. That is something, final stages in the preparation of items is an isur of tikkun. So here, it's like tikkun, it'd be an isur de rabbanon. Oh, Rashi goes on, de habile kedon din, or it's like an act of judgment. De gozer bei mishum shvus, there's a rabbinic restriction on conducting judgments on holidays, on Shabbos and holidays. V'hochi ko'amar ein hatoroso heter, the heter issued, the ruling issued by the mumcha, according to Rabbi Shimon, on Yom Tov, is not acceptable. V'eino muchon lehechsher, and therefore the animal is not considered muchon for your use. But what Rashi is grappling with, it seems to me, is that he's trying to explain the use of the word muchon in the Mishnah in a non-muktzah context, because Rabbi Shimon doesn't subscribe to the rules of muktzah to begin with. Therefore, the word muchon, which generally speaking is associated with muktzah, has to be redefined. And hence, Rashi says in his Hochi Ko'omar, in his redefinition, is the Ein Zeh Min HaMuchon means it's not muchon, it's not prepared for, in the sense of kashrus, in the sense of being allowed to be eaten, because a heter was given improperly or incorrectly in terms of the timing. The heter was issued on Yom Tov Day, a day during which we don't issue legal rulings. We continue now in the Gemara. B'mai komifliki. What is the basis of the machlokas between Rabbi Yehuda and Rabbi Shimon? And again, the basis is not a muktzah issue, because if that were the case, then if anything, Rabbi Shimon would be lenient. And yet we see here Rabbi Yehuda being lenient. So therefore, it's not a muktzah issue. And Rashi emphasizes this point. So what is the issue? If you were to say that the machlokes is an issue of are we allowed to look at mumin to judge blemishes on Yom Tov, to Rabbi Yehuda Sovar Royin Mumin B'Yom Tov, Rabbi Shimon Sovar Ein Royin Mumin B'Yom Tov, if that were their machlokes, Rabbi Yehuda says you can look, you're allowed to look at mumin on Yom Tov. Look, when we say look means look and judge upon them, and Rabbi Shimon says we don't look and judge upon them, then why not state their machlokes in general terms? Why does the Mishnah speak about an animal that fell into a pit? So that's the basic question. What is the machlokes between Rabbi Yehuda and Shimon based on? And whatever you explain, we're going to have to factor in the issue of its having fallen into a pit. That's part of the discussion. And hence, it doesn't appear right now as a general machlokas whether one looks at Mumin on Yom Tov or not. Because if that were their machlokas, just to repeat ourselves, the Mishnah would not have had to mention the falling into a pit. The Gemara goes through a number of stages, and you can see we've illustrated that with a double underline, one of our series markings. So, and on the side, we have indicated that these are shlomim shlavim. These are stages. Kedei levarer b'mai komifligi. In what are they arguing? Namely, b'mai komifligi, Rabbi Yehuda and Rabbi Shimon in the Mishnah. The Gemara continues. Bechor shenofa lebor, it's derichole. And we have a note on the side. The starred note reads, Yesh litzayim, we have to point out, Dilemaskona nishar bein Rabbi Shimon Rabbi Yehuda machlokes iroyin mumin b'yomtov. And by the time we get to the end of this sukya, the suggestion that the Gemara opened up with actually is a point of controversy between Rabbi Yehuda and Rabbi Shimon. Is one allowed to check out Mumin on Yom Tov? Avol bazeh shekatoni shenafal lebor, our note continues, but regarding that, but in view of the fact that the Mishnah speaks specifically about a case about the animal having fallen into a pit, HaMishnah mechadeshes oid protim b'shitas Rabbi Yehuda, the Mishnah reveals new or additional details within the opinion of Rabbi Yehuda, kedemuva behemshech haGemara, as will be revealed in the continuation of the Gemara, legilui chidush se nidrash arba shlovim shel birur, in order to reveal what the novel point is within Rabbi Yehuda, we go through four stages. So that's where we're holding now. The case of the falling into the pit is necessary. It's the richole. Salka daito chamino. I would have thought. Mishum tsar ba'le chayim. Because of the consideration of the pain inflicted on animals. The pain here, in this case, experienced by the animal being at the bottom of the pit. Ve'erim v'liske k'rebi Yeshua. Let us use a legal subterfuge and raise it. Li'arim is a subterfuge, a trick, and raise it, liske, to raise it from the bottom of the pit. So I would have thought because of that factor, you would immediately be able to raise it from the bottom of the pit, which is, in fact, not the case. And that's what the Gemara is saying. Komash Malon, the Mishnah reveals to us that that cannot be done. Now, for a little more background, let us take a look at the Rashi. Le'arim, le'arim with an ayin, don't confuse that word with the word le'horim. Le'arim is to pick something up. Le'arim with an ayin means a subterfuge. Le'arim ve'loimar vadai yimtza bo'imum. Employ a legal subterfuge and say, oh, look at this poor animal, it's suffering at the bottom of the pit, I'm sure it has a mum on it, therefore it's something that has use for me, and I'm going to thereby justify raising it. The liske, Rabbi Yeshua, liske is to raise it from the bottom, based on Rabbi Yeshua, the Bar Perik Mishilin, as Rabbi Yeshua says later in this Masechta, Oisiv es beno shenoflu lebor, in the case of a mother and offspring that fell into a pit, and it is forbidden to shech, to slaughter both a mother and its offspring on the same day, male es harishon amenas l'shchot, you would raise one from the bottom of the pit with the intention of slaughtering it. To slaughter one is obviously allowed. So you would raise one of the two, the mother and the offspring, one of the two you would raise from the bottom of the pit, with the intention of slaughtering it, and then v'eino shochet, then you decide not to slaughter it. And okay, so if I've decided not to use this one, I'll use the other one, v'chozer malas hasheni, and then raise the other one from the bottom of the pit. Once I've decided prior to the raising of the second one not to use the first one. So then the second animal is the one I need for Yom Tov. And that's the one he picks, he then raises that from the bottom. And then at this point, both are above, are at the surface. Rotzo zesh shochet. If he chooses this one, he'll slaughter it. If he chooses the other one, he'll slaughter it. So that's a legal subterfuge. Namely, when both the mother and offspring were at the bottom of the pit, he could not have decided, I want to raise both of the animals, because one of them was legally inaccessible, because you're not allowed to slaughter both of them on the same day. However, as you can see in this legal subterfuge, initially he didn't say, I want to use both. Initially he said, I want one chooses. One raises it and then says, no, I don't want this one, I want the other one. So based on that type of thinking, we thought in our Mishnah, when you have this Bechor at the bottom of the pit, whether it has that has a mum on it, you would reason, oh, I'm sure it has a mum, and therefore I'm going to pick it up from the bottom. And then whatever happens later is another story. So the Mishnah then says, we said in the Gemara, that is, Chumash Malon, Rabbi Yehuda in the Mishnah does not allow for that. And that's why in the Mishnah, Rabbi Yehuda said the mumchah has to descend into the pit to see the mum. The Gemara continues, "I hachi, if this were true, that the Mishnah is revealing within Shitas Rabbi Yehuda that you're not that the mumchah has to go into the pit, and we cannot employ Rabbi Yeshua's subterfuge in order to raise it from the bottom." Well, then the Mishnah should have reflected that as part of its agenda. Ihachi lo yishchot. The loshon of Rabbi Yehuda, the expression Rabbi Yehuda said, was don't lo yishchot. Lo yale v'yishchot mi boyale. The ruling of Rabbi Yehuda in the language in our Mishnah, at the top line of this page, should have said that if the mumche doesn't discover the mum, well, lo yale, don't bring it up first and then decide to slaughter it. Lo yale v'yishchot mi boyale. It should have indicated the issue of not bringing up from the bottom. But we didn't see that expression in the Mishnah. The Gemara continues and says, lo tzricha. So what do therefore I do still need the Mishnah. The Ovar the Aske. The person violated the law, and he did raise it from the bottom. Salkadai techamino lishchete. I would have thought that, well, once he raised it from the bottom anyway, and the mumche rules that it's a permanent mum, so you should be allowed to slaughter it. Kamash molon, well, Mishnah tells me no. Let's go over this line again because we over-explained, we said a little too much. The Gemara says, lo, we said lo tzricha, the Mishnah still is necessary, even though it doesn't have the language of lo yalev yishchot in it. We're talking about a case where he already brought the bechor up from the bottom. That's the ovar v'aske. Ovar means aveira. He violated the law and raised it from the bottom of the pit. So, Salkadai techamino. I would have thought, well, since he raised it from the bottom, lishchete, let him slaughter it. Kamash malon, Mishnah says, no, he's not allowed to slaughter it. The Gemara asks, what kind of havamina is that? What kind of thinking is that? Lishchete ha tamhu. What do you mean he should be allowed to shecht it? It still is, tam means it has, doesn't have a permanent blemish. So the Gemara responds, lo tzricha denofal beimuma. The Mishnah is talking about a case where it now developed a mum. Now meaning now on Yom Tov developed a mum. Therefore, I have the havamina that you should be allowed to shecht it. The Gemara says, v'ha muktzahu. What do you mean it now developed a mum? What, I violated the law, brought it up from the bottom on Yom Tov, and now it develops a mum. How could Rabbi Yehuda possibly say that you can shecht it? It was muktzah at the entrance of Yom Tov. It didn't have the mum. And so it's obvious that Rabbi Yehuda would say you cannot shecht it. So what's the case in the Mishnah? Ella? The case in the Mishnah is, as we explained at the outset of our shiur, Ela denofal be mumoiver me'erev yom tov. The case in the Mishnah features an animal that happened to have a transient mum, a temporary type blemish, already from before Yom Tov. V'hashto habile mum kavua. And now it develops the mum became permanent in nature. And he violated the halacha and raised it from the bottom. Mahu de tamo de daite luya v'nishvate. You might have thought that, well, since it had a mum over, it had some form of blemish already from before Yom Tov. Therefore, the person's mind is already on the animal, and he should, and being that he raised it from the bottom before a ruling took place, he should be allowed to slaughter it. Chumash Malon, the Mishnah tells us that no, he's not allowed to slaughter it. And why not? Because he violated the law by raising it before the mumche ruled upon it. Now, at this point, we're going to look at the Rashi. We're going to learn through the Rashi on this Gemara, because as we were going along in the Gemara, we still have to somehow fit the language of the Mishnah into each stage of Havaminas. What was the Gemara thinking at each stage? So we're going to look at the Rashi found on the fourth to last narrow line. There's a star there, Lo Tzricha De'ovar V'aske. This is going back to the second stage of the Gemara. Don't forget, we had said within Rebbe Yehuda, why was it necessary, if the issue is of Machlokis being Rebbe Yehuda and Rebbe Shimon is, do we look at Mumin on Yom Tov or not, then why did the Mishnah speak about the animal having fallen into a pit? So the Gemara answered at stage 2, because we're talking about a case if, as the Gemara said in stage 1, that the falling into the pit was necessary because Rebbe Yehuda is telling me, do not raise it from the bottom before a ruling takes place, why didn't the language of the Mishnah reflect that? So we answered, because in the Mishnah's case, we're talking about someone who violated the halacha and raised it anyway. So the expression lo yale would not be appropriate, because he already raised it from the bottom. And the Gemara explained, well, I would have thought that since he raised it from the bottom anyway, he should be allowed to slaughter it. And the Gemara then had jumped on that and said, what do you mean be allowed to slaughter it? But it doesn't have a blemish. So now let's look at the Rashi. Lo tzricho di avar v'aske. Umashma usa. The lo liske. The mashmos, the implication of don't raise it at the outset. Me reisha shamas mina. From the beginning of the Mishnah, that I would have been able to see anyway. The Kotoni Gyeret Hamum Chavira. The Mishnah said that the expert should descend into the pit. Velo Kotoni Yale Avira. The Mishnah doesn't say raise it and check it out. So the objection at stage 1 in the Gemara was that the Mishnah should have taught Lo Yale Vishchot. In fact, the Mishnah does convey that information of lo ya'ale by virtue of the fact that the Mishnah already says yered mumche vire. V'hodar, Rashi goes on, v'hodar ashmin and achriti. And then the Mishnah tells us something else. De'i avar v'aske v'lo motza bo mum lo yishchot. That if a person violated the halacha and raised it from the bottom before it was ruled upon, and he raised it and did not find a mum, so the Mishnah tells me, don't slaughter it. Well, if that's what the Mishnah is telling me, so upon that, the Gemara jumped and said, what do you mean that lo yishcho? It's that either, what do you mean, let's re-explain, that if you raised it, so I would have thought that you should be able to shecht it. What do you mean you... you would have thought you would be able to shecht it because you violated the halacha and raised it from the bottom, but it doesn't have a mum. So the Gemara answer to that, it's talking about a case where it did develop a mum. And Rashi continues, the nofa be'muma hashto, the hochi ko'omar, and thusly the Mishnah is teaching. Im yesh bo mum hakavua me'erev yom tov, if it had a permanent tight mum from before Yom Tov, yale v'yishchot, then raise it and slaughter it. V'im lav, and if not, the lohoyo me'erev yom tov el hayom, but if it didn't have a permanent mum from before Yom Tov, but rather today it developed the mum, afilu ovar v'heleu lo yishchot, even if he violated the halacha, and even if he raised it, and it has this mum that fell on Yom Tov, so you cannot shecht it. So then the Gemara asks, is that what the Mishnah is here to tell me? That if you were over, you violated the halacha and raised it from the bottom, and it developed a mum on Yom Tov, so you're not allowed to shecht it. That's obvious. V'hom muktzehu. Ime esmo, Rashi goes on, Ime esmo lohavi be mum klal, if from Erev Yom Tov there was no mum at all, pshita de lo yishchot, it's obvious that you're not allowed to slaughter it, doshmin and Rabbi Huda, but kamaduchti disle mutsa. Rabbi Huda has revealed to us in numerous locations that there is a mutsa problem regarding something that wasn't fit at the entrance of the holiday. So then the Gemara told us at the fourth stage, that it had a mum, in fact, from Erev Yom Tov, but it was of a temporary nature, it hadn't been ruled upon, and it became kavua on Yom Tov. Rashi says, komash mlon di'i lo havi kavua me'erev Yom Tov, if it wasn't permanent from Erev Yom Tov, lo yishchot mishum de muktze machmas isur havi, inami mishum de ovar v'aske. So that if it had not been established as a mum kavua from Erev Yom Tov, so you're not allowed to shecht it. And the problem there is, in fact, a muktzah problem. Another explanation Rashi offers as to why it would be usur to shecht it is because he violated the halacha and raised it when he shouldn't have raised it from the bottom. At this point, then, we see as follows. There is a basic machlokas in the Mishnah between Rabbi Yehuda and Rabbi Shimon. According to Rabbi Yehuda, checking of mumen is something allowed to be done on Yom Tov. However, there are restrictions in the case of a bechor that fell to the bottom of the pit. According to Rabbi Shimon, no checking of mumen is allowed to take place on Yom Tov. And as we said before, his restriction is not based on muktzah, but based on the idea that one does not issue or offer judgments on Yom Tov. Or we saw, it looks like misaking. Rabbi Yehuda, on the other hand, doesn't look at things like that, and hence allows checking of mumen on Yom Tov. However, if in the case of a bechor that fell into a pit, Rebbe Yehuda adds information. Even though you're allowed to check mumen out, you're not allowed to raise the bechor from the bottom of the pit before a ruling took place concerning the mumen. And the Mishnah then tells us, number one, that you are not allowed to raise it from the bottom, and that we saw from the fact the Mishnah says the mumcha has to go into the pit to check it out. And the Mishnah tells us that if he was oiver, he violated that ruling and raised the animal before a ruling concerning permanence of mum took place. Once you violated the halacha and raised it from the bottom before the ruling took place, it is usur to use that bechor, even if there was that subsequent ruling of a mum as being permanent. And the reason for that is because we saw in Rashi two possibilities, because of an issur of muktzah, because it wasn't ruled upon before you raised it from the bottom, and another explanation is that you violated the halacha of raising it before the ruling was issued. We continue now in the Gemara. Tanu Rabbanu, we have a Tanaic source, and you'll notice that this source continues to the second line from the top of Amud Beis. B'chor tam shenofa labor. Now Rashi emphasized something of great importance. We're going to be learning this Tanaic source, bearing in mind that the Tanoim in this source, we're going to see the shitos that do not hold from muktzah, that muktzah does not present itself as a problem or as a restriction. And this you can see in Rashi, in the lines under the Gemara text. You'll notice the eighth line approximately under the Gemara text, where Rashi says, "The leslehu muktzah lahanach tanoi bevechor." These tanoim don't hold that muktzah presents itself as a problem with regard to a firstborn male animal. The nature of the parsa that it attracts the owner's attention all the time, even if it doesn't have a mum, he's thinking about the use of this animal in the event that it does develop a mum, so that the issue of it being cast aside or put out of his mind, hence resulting in muktzah, is not a factor over here. So that they can hold in theory from the principle of muktzah, but in the case of the bechor, muktzah does not apply. Tanu Rabbanan, bechor tam shenofa labor, an unblemished firstborn male animal that has sanctity, because of it, of its being a firstborn, it happened to fall into a pit. Rabbi Yehuda Anossi Omer. Rabbi Yehuda Anossi is also known to us as Rebbe. He says, Yered Mumche Vire. An expert is allowed to descend into the pit and check it out. Im Yesh Boi Mum Yale V'Yishchot. If it has a blemish, and here we're adding, very importantly, even if it's a blemish that happened to develop on Yom Tov proper, that is not a problem, because of that which we saw before in the Rashi, he doesn't hold from muktzah as being a problem in this case, because his mind was on it, he was thinking about it. So if it has a mum and the expert rules upon it at the bottom of the pit, you can now raise it from the bottom and slaughter it. V'im lav lo yishchot. And if it doesn't have the permanent mum, so you cannot raise it. Now Rashi adds here importantly, when it says when the source says v'im lav, Rashi says v'over v'aske. Even if he violated and brought it up, lo yishchot, he's not allowed to slaughter it. Afilu nofal boy mumli achar halah. Even if after he raised it from the bottom illegally, it does then develop a mum. Uknosu mishum dover viaske. This is a fine we impose upon him for having raised it. And now Rashi explains lo yishchot, the lashon of the Mishnah that says do not slaughter it. Lo yale baromas shchita komar. Don't use a subterfuge thinking that I'm going to be able to shecht it. So it says the lo yishchot, it's telling me don't even think of doing such a thing, of using a subterfuge to raise it with the intention of slaughtering. The lo yishchot, simply the issur of slaughtering, lo itzterich, that I don't have to tell you that if it doesn't have a mum that you're not allowed to slaughter it, that's obvious. The hotamhu, it's unblemished. And therefore, Rashi is pointing out that the expression we just read, the im lav lo yishchot, is not to be translated, and if it doesn't have a mum, you're not allowed to slaughter it. That is obvious. So rather, it's telling me the imlav, if the mulcha did not go into the pit to check it out, but rather you used a subterfuge to raise it, lo yishchot, you are not allowed to slaughter it because you raised it from the pit before a ruling was made concerning it being a baal mum. The source continues. We go back to the Gemara text. Omar lo Reb Shimon ben Menasya. Harei Omru. Now, this statement of Harei Omru is associated with Rabbi Shimon in the Mishnah. Don't confuse by the way the names Rabbi Shimon ben Nasya and Rabbi Shimon in our Mishnah. This Rabbi Shimon Nasya is from a next generation from that of Rabbi Shimon in the Mishnah. Harei Omru ein royin mumin biyom tov. It has been said that you're not allowed to look at mumin on Yom Tov. You're not allowed to rule upon mumin on Yom Tov. Ketzad, noilad boi mum me'erev Yom Tov, ein mevakrin oso biyom tov. If a mum had developed from before Yom Tov, so lechatchila, as a first choice, you're not to check it out on Yom Tov. However, it should be noted, if he violated the halacha and did check it out, and it turned out to be a permanent type mum, so he can shecht it. Noilad boy mum, the Gemara continues, noilad boy mum biyom tov. We're continuing at the top of Omid Beis. If a mum developed on Yom Tov, Rabbi Shimon Oimer, ein ze min hamulchan. Even if he violated the halacha and checked out the mum now on Yom Tov, but it's a mum that developed on Yom Tov, so Rabbi Shimon says, ein ze min hamulchan. It's not allowed to be used. Rashi at the top. Now notice Rashi occupies both columns, so notice where the arrow is pointing in the direction to look for the Rashi. We refer to this as the outside column, where Tosfos usually appears. Rashi says, b'yom tov, v'im noilad boi mum b'yom tov, if a mum developed for the first time on Yom Tov itself, b'zuhay Reb Shimon ben Yochoi omer ein zemen amuchan. Regarding this, Reb Shimon ben Yochoi, who is the famous Rebbe Shimon, when he appears without the father's name Ben Yochoi in the Mishnah, Rebbe Shimon is Reb Shimon Yochoi. He is the one that, generally speaking, doesn't hold from the Muktzah restriction. Even he will tell you this animal that did not have a mum before Yom Tov is Osir. V'afilu ovaro bikro lo yishchot shu kemesakno legamri. Because this situation where it did not have a mum at all from before Yom Tov, and the mum developed initially on Yom Tov, and the ruling was made that it's a permanent mum, that's considered a total tikkun, total repairing. And hence, even Reb Shimon agrees that it would be usur. And we continue in the Tanaic source, v'shavin. Shavin means there's agreement between Rabbi Yehuda and Rabbi Shimon. Shim nolad hu umumo imo shezeh min hamuchan. If you have a firstborn that was born on Yom Tov itself, in other words, it wasn't available before Yom Tov for checking out because it was still inside its mother, so it was born on Yom Tov, and together with its birth there was a mum, it was born as a blemished animal, that one is allowed to use. And that will be dealt with at somewhat extensively later in the Gemara. Rabbi Shimon, that is Rashi, explains that here there isn't any problem of tikkun, and as we said, that which Rashi says actually will be explained later in the Gemara. Dorash Rabbo bar Rav Huna. Rabbo lectured. He issued the following teaching. Noilad hu umumoi imoi mevakrin oisoi beyontoiv lechadchila. An animal that was born, and it's a firstborn, and it emerged in its birth with a blemish. One is allowed, as a first choice, to have it checked out by an expert on Yom Tov. Once again, we're talking about a case of the animal was born, this firstborn was born on Yom Tov. Omar le Rav Nachman. Abo Toni. Rav Nachman says that his father teaches in a Tanaic source, im ovar ubikroi mvukar. If they violated and had it checked out, it is considered a good checking and can be slaughtered. V'ad amris mevakrin oisoi l'chadchila, and you, Rabbo Barav Huna, you teach that checking is allowed to be done as a first choice. The Tanaic source that I was taught says if they violated the rule and checked it out on Yom Tov, and you're saying you're allowed to do an initial checking on Yom Tov as a first choice? And now Abaye makes a point. Notice it's a long point. Omar Abaye, kavose de Rabbo Barav Huna mistabro. Rabbo's approach is more likely. Midikotoni tlosa bovi. From the fact that in the Tanaic source that we saw that began at the bottom of Omid Aleph, there are three sections. You may have noticed as we were learning the Tanaic source, there were numbers that appeared. And the numbers that we saw in the source are useful over here. We will be breaking it down into Tlosa Bavi. Tlosa is three Bavi sections. After we go through this point, we will then be able to justify Rabbo Barav Huna's approach that in the case that the animal is born, this firstborn emerges on Yom Tov with a blemish, that the official stamp of approval by the mumche can be issued as what we call lichatchila, without any issue of violation playing any role. Now, how do we point that out? How do we prove that? By the fact that there are three sections in the original Tanaic source, leaving room to reach this conclusion. What are the three sections? Number one, Noilad boi mu me'erev Yom Tov. Ein mevakrin oisoi biyomtov. If an animal happened to have a blemish, a firstborn that was born before Yom Tov, and it happened to have a blemish before Yom Tov, but it wasn't sanctioned or it wasn't ruled upon as a formal permanent blemish erev Yom Tov, so the source said, you don't check it out. Ein mevakrin oisoi biyomtov, and the expression of ein mevakrin implies lechatchila hu delo hodiyavet shapir domi, that as a first choice, it should not be checked out on Yom Tov, but if it was, and it turned out to be permanent, so it can be slaughtered. Shapir domi means it is fine. The ruling is fine if they were over and checked it out. Number two. Noilad boi mum biyom tov. A mum emerged for the first time on Yom Tov. Rabbi Shimon Oimer, ein ze min hamuchan. It is not allowed to be used. Dafilu dieved namilo. That case is one where even post facto, it is not allowed to be used. What happened there? The mum emerged for the first time on Yom Tov. Even if it were ruled upon and found to be permanent, it cannot be used. The Hodar Tani, and then it taught, and we have to note that this third section was in the name included Rabbi Shimon, and it said here, V'shavin shim noilad hu umumo imoi sheze min hamuchan. Everyone agrees that if it was born on Yom Tov together with a blemish, it is mutter. De'afilu l'chadchila nami. It's mutter even as a first choice. Meaning that it's born on Yom Tov, emerging with its blemish. It is mutter as a first choice to rule upon the blemish and use it. So, by analyzing the three situations, the three cases, when is the mutter only, when is the heter b'dieved? That's in a case where a mum had been there erev Yom Tov, but the ruling took place on Yom Tov. So we said that's the case that is mutter post facto. There was another case that's not allowed even post facto. That's the case where a mum emerged for the first time on an already born animal, but the mum emerged for the first time on Yom Tov. And then there's a third case, which is mutter not post facto, but as a first choice. We have three different sections, each one reflecting a different legal level of permission. So just to repeat ourselves, by the fact that you have three sections, it must be that each section is revealing a different level of legal permission. And hence, the case of nolad hu umumo imo, when the Tanaic source said shumen amuchan, that must be a third case, a third level of permission, meaning in that case it's mutter even l'chadchila. The two other cases not having been mutter l'chadchila. The first case was mutter only post facto b'dieved, and the second case wasn't mutter to begin, wasn't mutter even post facto. This case is mutter of nolad hu umumo imo, like the din that Rabbo Bar Rav Huna taught. It's mutter even l'chadchila. So this is Abaye's point, that which Rabbo Rav Huna taught is most likely. The Gemara continues, v'ha'ki osa Rav Hoshaya osa v'aisi masnisa b'yodei. But we have a problem, and that is that when Rav Hoshaya came, he brought with him a Tanaic source in which we see the following. Bein shenolad boi mum me'erev yom tov. Whether it's a case of an animal having a mum there from before Yom Tov, ubein shenolad boi mum b'yom tov, or a case where a mum developed on Yom Tov, chachomim oimrim ein ze min hamuchan. Cases 1 and 2 in this source are not allowed at all. Cases 1 and 2 feature animals that had been born before Yom Tov. Case 1 was there was already a mum from before Yom Tov. Case 2 is the mum developed on Yom Tov. Regarding both of these cases, the Chachomim say that it's not mutter even b'di'eved. Leaving the third case, namely nolad hu umumo imo, which is a more lenient situation, because you couldn't have done anything about it before Yom Tov, but that more lenient situation would therefore be mutter, but only b'dieved. Let's go over this point. Cases 1 and 2, where the animal had been born from before Yom Tov, aren't good even post facto, even b'diavad. Case, the third case, which is not in this source, though, one would say is mutter, but only one level more, mutter only b'dieved. That is like Rav Nachman taught in the name of his father, and not like Abaye. Well, so now the Gemara asks, "V'elo kashiyach." But now that source, the analysis that Abaye brought, is now difficult. So if you're going to rely on the Rav Hoshaya source, what are you going to do about the three section source that Abaye brought to support Rabbo Bar Rav Huna? The Gemara responds, "Hahi, the three section Tanaic source that we brought to support Rabbo Bar Rav Huna, namely Abaye's approach, is actually an unreliable source. That source, Ado Bar Uchmi, he. That source was taught by a gentleman by the name of Ado Bar Uchmi, the Meshabesh Vitani. He literally messes things up and teaches messed up sources. Rashi says he's a person that didn't remember. He was a forgetful individual, and even so, he taught Tanaic sources, so they're not reliable. Omar Rav Nachman Bar Yitzchok, Masnisin Nami Daika. Careful reading of our Mishnah will actually support Rabbi Oshaya's approach, the approach that says Nolad Hu Mumo Imo is Mutter only by the Evid. Dikotoni, Rabbi Shimon Oimer, Kol She'ein Mumo Nikur Me Erev Yom Tov Ein Ze Min Hamuchan. Well, this we saw in our Mishnah. This quote comes from the top of Chof Vov Omid Aleph. My Ein Mumo Nikur. When Rav Shimon in the Mishnah teaches that Ein Mumo Nikur, what does that mean? Ilemo She'ein Mumo Nikur Klal. That there was no mum visible at all. Pshita Tzricho Lemeimar. It's poshit that it's usher. Now, bear in mind that Reb Shimon in the Mishnah was responding to Reb Yehuda. In other words, Reb Shimon was trying to make a point to Reb Yehuda. And we can work with the assumption that Tanoim, when they speak, they're not out to tell us things that are obvious. So when Reb Shimon in the Mishnah says, Ein Mumo Nikur, if it's talking about a case of an animal that Erev Yom Tov there was no mum visible at all, it's obvious that in the eyes of Rabbi Yehuda that would be muktzeh. I don't need Reb Shimon. Reb Shimon doesn't need to tell Rabbi Yehuda that Ein Ze Min HaMuchan, that it's not muchan, it's not mutter because it's muktzeh. That's obvious when you're talking to Rabbi Yehuda. Rabbi Yehuda is an opinion that holds from the concept of muktzeh. Ella. So what does it mean in the Mishnah when Reb Shimon says Ein that kol she'ein mumo nikur me'erev yom tov ein ze min hamuchan? What is it? Rather, Ella, there was a mum. Dolo ischazi luchocha me'erev yom tov imum kavua imum oiver. That which was lacking was that it didn't receive rabbinic approval, didn't receive the expert's approval from erev yom tov, whether it was a permanent mum or not. Kotoni mias, it however says regarding that, Ein ze min hamuchan, and we explained earlier that language of Ein ze min hamuchan indicates it's not mutter even b'di'evin. We saw that before. So the case of an animal with a mum that was visible, it simply hadn't been ruled upon from Erev Yom Tov, that is not mutter even post facto. Well, what are you going to say then about the more lenient case of where the animal is born with a mum on Yom Tov? Well, it'll be one stage more lenient, and we'll say it will be allowed, but only b'di'eved. That is exactly what Rabbi Oshaya had taught, countering Abaye. You can see now we have a bracketed section, and note the fact that this is a rather long bracketed section. This continues down Chof Zayin Omer Aleph, six lines down from the top of Chof Zayin Omer Aleph. Now we have a note on the side, the Nosei, and we indicate this is Besograyim Ad Chof Zayin Omer Aleph, and Mivneh, the structural note we combine into one. And we read our introduction, Diyun im yesh muktze lechatzi Shabbos. There's a discussion concerning a concept. Is there a concept of muktze
Chatzis Shabbos, half for half of Shabbos. Exactly what that means, we'll wait for the Gemara. Now this goes at Chof Zayin Aleph six shurois Mirosh Omid, six lines from the top of Omid of Chof Zayin Aleph. Achar kach haGemara chizeres liriyas mumin yom tov. After that, the Gemara will go back to the topic of checking mumin, of ruling upon mumin on Yom Tov itself. Now, hopefully, we've mapped out the Gemara structure. And with that in mind, we continue. Just before we continue, just to remind you that the last section of Gemara featured a machlokas between Rav Nachman and Abaye, an animal that's born, a firstborn that emerges on Yom Tov with a mum. Can it be checked out as a first choice, l'chatchila, or not? Rav Nachman, you should say, Rabba Bar Avhuna, was supported by Abaye in saying you're allowed to check it out, l'chatchila. Rav Nachman was supported by a source brought in later by Rabbi Shaya, who says you're not allowed to check it out, l'chatchila. And then the Gemara, in the name of Rav Nachman Bar Yitzchok, he demonstrated that careful reading of the Mishnah will reveal a support to Rabbi Shaya and the approach that was taken by Rav Nachman before, that you're not allowed to check it out, l'chatchila. We continue now with the bracketed section. Boi mine Rav Hillel me Rabo. Rav Hillel asks from of Rabo, Yesh muktzah l'chatzis Shabbos oy ein muktzah l'chatzis Shabbos. Is there muktzah for half of Shabbos or not? Heichi domi. What are the circumstances? E the achsi bein hashmoshes. If the item in question is something fit upon dusk at the entrance of Shabbos, ichsi, so it's fit. There's no question about that. E de lo achsi, if it's not fit, lo achsi, so it's obviously not allowed. What is the question? Lo tzricha, it's necessary to ask this question, the echsi bahadur, idchi bahadur echsi, where at Bein HaShmoshos it was allowed, it was accessible, and afterwards, during Shabbos, it became unfit. It was idchi, meaning docha is to be pushed aside. It became unfit, and then vahodar echsi, and then later it became fit again. We look at the Rashi, where you see a divra masel, the idchu. Rashi, as we mentioned, by the way, is in both columns. So you'll notice the Rashi at the top of the column ordinarily occupied by Rashi, called the inner column. Top line, the idchu b'shabbos, shenoflo aleihem geshomim v'tofchu. We're talking about a case of, let us say, some fruit that was set aside to dry. And during Shabbos, the fruit that had become dried was became soggy by rain falling on them, and they swelled. V'hoder achsu sheshovsen hashemesh, and then later the sun shone upon them and they became fit again. So now let's go back into the Gemara. That case will be brought out in the course of the discussion. So, in a case like that, what is the din? My. Omar lei, so Rabo answers, yesh mukta. There is a problem. You can see, then, Rabo, who says yesh mukta, is issuing a ruling of stringency. We have a structural issue to deal with, the diamond appears, and on the side of the one under the Mivneh heading, you'll notice the diamond introduces Shnei Lishonos Hafuchos Shel Rabo, two opposite versions of Rabo.
So at this point, Rabba is issuing a ruling of stringency. If you skip down a few lines, you can see the squiggle underlined Ikar the Amri expression, followed by a diamond also at the end of the line, where Rabba responds, Ein Mukta Lechatzi Shabbos. Obviously, an opposite version. So, we continue. Rabba, regarding the Shaila, the question of is there Mukta Lechatzi Shabbos or not, where, as we said, something was fit at the entrance of Shabbos. For example, you had set some figs or grapes on a roof to dry, and at the entrance of Shabbos they were fit, they were still edible, and then in the course of Shabbos they became, they were put on the roof to dry, and at the entrance of Shabbos they were already fit for eating. They were dried, they had become raisins and dried figs. But in the course of Shabbos, rain fell on them and they became unfit, became soggy. And then later the sun shone forth again on them and they became dried out and then fit. Can you eat them later on Shabbos after they became fit again? So Rabba rules no, because yesh mukta. We continue in the Gemara, Eisvei. We have the following quote from our Mishnah. Vishavin, there was agreement between Rabbi Yehuda and Rabbi Shimon. Shim noilad umumo imo sheze min hamuchan. If a firstborn emerged on Yom Tov together with a blemish, it is available. V'amai, why is it available? Why is it mutter? Name all, why not say as follows? Hai b'chor meikoro havichozi agavimei. The Bechor, the firstborn, before it emerged, it was fit along with its mother. Namely, you could have slaughtered a pregnant cow and then eaten it, the mother and the offspring, with that slaughtering. The embryo was still inside the mother, and hence it was mutter through the shechita of the mother. A Bechor doesn't gain its sanctity until it emerges in birth. It emerges from the womb. Before it emerged, and we were on Yom Tov, it was mutter together with the mother. Is yaled le itchile. When it's born, it's now a firstborn, so it's cast aside. Itchile, it's pushed aside from heter. It's usur to eat it. Echsi l'chacham ishtirile. Then, when the blemish is shown to the expert, it then becomes allowed. When the chacham rules that the blemish is a permanent blemish. And what did the Mishnah tell us about a case like that? That it's mutter. So, what do we see? We would see contrary to Rabba. Omar Abaye v'temer of Safra. In defense of Rabba's ruling, Abaye in some versions say Rav Safra, Kigon di Yasvi Dayoni Hosam. The Dayonim, the experts in blemish evaluation, were seated there as the animal was emerging in its birth. Therefore, there wasn't an interim stage of it being idchile, of it not being mukta. So the case in the Mishnah is not parallel to the shaila of mukta lechatzi Shabbos. There was no situation of it being unfit. When it was still inside the mother, it was mutter. At the moment of birth, the Chachomim saw it emerging with a blemish, and they ruled at that moment it is a permanent blemish. So there's no situation of it being cast aside, of it being dochui. Hence, the case of the Mishnah is not an example of mukta at all. Ika diamri. We continue in the Gemara with the opposite version. Upon having been asked, is there mukta lechatzi Shabbos? Omar le, Rabba answers, ein mukta lechatzi Shabbos. Well, having been said, we ask Lemo Misayale. This is not a challenge question, but rather it's an attempt to support Rabba. Can we not say support to Rabba from the following? V'shavin shim noilad umumo imo shezeh min hamuchan. The case of the firstborn male animal being born with its mum, the Mishnah rules, it's allowed. V'hal b'chor meikora v'chazi agavime, initially before it's born, it's fit along with its mother. Isyalid le'itchile, upon its birth, it's a firstborn animal, and it's not mutter because of the sanctity that it has. Echsi l'chocham ishtrilei. Then when it's shown to the chocham, and he rules that the blemish that it was born with is a permanent blemish, now it becomes mutter again. And the Mishnah said it's min hamuchan. So this would support Rabbah's ruling. Omar Abaye here rejects the support. The Itema Rav Safra, some versions have Rav Safra. Kigon di Yasvi Dayoni Hosam. The case there is that the Dayonim, the experts, were seated there as the Bechor was born. And there was no matzav, there was no situation of it being in a state of mukta at all. Therefore, it doesn't parallel the case of Yesh Mukta L'Chatzi Shabbos that Rabbah was addressing. Hence, you can't cite the Mishnah as a support to Rabbah. Okay, the question remains, and the Gemara wants to try to determine what the rule is. And on the side, we have a mivneh, a structural note, a triangle appears, and as you scan ahead in the Gemara, you'll notice a couple of these triangles. They are shlavim, they are stages, levarer, hechi, no, sorry, let's say, mistake, nisyonos, lifshot, she'elo hanal. These are attempts to resolve the question from before of whether there is muktzah l'chatzi Shabbos. Haim yesh muktza l'chatzi Shabbos or not. So now in the Gemara, Toshma, hoyo oichel, a person was eating ba'anovim, he was eating some grapes, v'hoisir, and he had leftover grapes, v'helon, l'gag, glasses, mem smukim, and he put them up on the roof for them to become raisins. Betainim, v'hosir, v'helon, l'gag, lasos, mangrogus, who was eating figs. He had leftover figs, put them up on the roof to become dried. Grogers are dried figs. Lo yoichal mehen ad shiyazmin miba'oid yoim. He is not to eat from them unless he prepares them from before Shabbos. Likewise, you find by these other kinds of fruits, farsikin and chavushin, names of different fruits, and all other fruits. Hechi domi. Well, what are the circumstances? The double underlined marking appears, and on the side under the mivneh, they represent shlavim levar hechi domi. What are we talking about? We have to explain this source. All we did was we gave a literal translation to the source of someone who was eating grapes and left them left over, and he put them on the roof to become raisins. What are the circumstances? Hechi domi. E dechazu, if we're talking about things that are fit for eating. So, loma le hazmona, why does any formal preparation need to be made? Any designation to eat them? Why does any formal designation need to be made? Ida lo chazu, if they are not fit to be eaten, ki azmin lehu mai have, when he does designate them, of what benefit is there anyway? They're not fit. V'chitemo d'lo yoda i'chazu i'lochazu. You might say, well, we're talking about a person who didn't know whether they would be fit or not. V'omar Rav Kana muktza shiyovash. V'ein ha'baylim makirin bo muter. Muktza is something set aside, like in the case of the raisins and the figs. And they had become dry before Shabbos set in. But the owner didn't know that. The owners hadn't checked it out before Shabbos. It's mutter. So if it's a case of uncertainty, that doesn't pose a problem. Elolav dechazu. It must be the source was talking about a case where they were fit for eating upon the entrance of Shabbos, ve'idchu, and in the course of Shabbos, they became unfit. V'hodar achsu, and then they became fit again. Ve'i amris ein muktzah, and if you'll take the position of ein muktzah l'chatzi Shabbos, that the chatzi Shabbos situation doesn't interfere with their heter, their permission, loma luhazmona, why is there any necessity of designating them? So this would be an attempt to show yesh muktzah l'chatzi Shabbos. And the only way to get around that would be a designation from before Shabbos that you intend to use these, to eat from these fruits. Elomai. So then the Gemara responds to this attempted proof and says, so what do you want to say? Yesh muktzah? That there is muktzah l'chatzi Shabbos? Ki azmin luhu mayhave. The fact that you designated them from before, of what benefit is there in that? So the Gemara responds and says, lo tzricha. Here, at this point then, we're going to, let's say, give an explanation to the source that takes us out of the realm, we'll see, of our original question. And that will give rise to the fact that the Gemara, at the bottom line, tries to answer the question again. So the Gemara says, the case of this source is lo tzricha, it means it is necessary, de achsu velo achsu, they're partially fit. In other words, they're partially dried out. De iko inshi, de achli viko inshi de lo achli, there are people that will eat from them as they are now, and there are those that won't. Azmin, if he formally designated the fruits as something he wants to eat, so goli daite, he reveals to us that they're not muktzah in his eyes. Lo azmin, if he doesn't issue a formal designation that he wants to eat from them, lo goli daite, so he doesn't reveal that he's of those people that would eat from it. Ta shma. So we attempt to answer the question again about yesh muktzah l'chashis, l'chatzi Shabbos or not, and again we will just repeat that when we speak about muktzah l'chatzi Shabbos, it means that at a certain point during Shabbos the item wasn't available at all, wasn't edible at all. Later it becomes edible. What is the din? So the Gemara says, Toshma mipulin v'adoshim. Let us conclude from the case of pulin v'adoshim, we'll just, without a literal translation, we'll say it refers to a certain type of beans that need to be cooked up. Now, we cook up these beans on Yom Tov. Cooking is allowed on Yom Tov. Da pulin v'adoshim, me'ikora chazu lochus. Lochus is chewing something raw. So that from before Yom Tov, at the entrance of Yom Tov, they were fit. You could eat these beans raw. People sometimes open up pods of green peas, and green peas, most people would eat them cooked, but people will open up pods of fresh green peas and eat them as they are. Shadinu b'kedero idchulahu. Then, in the course of Yom Tov, he puts them in a pot, starts boiling up the water, and as they are boiling, so you wouldn't eat from them. So they're idchulu, they're pushed away, they're not available, they would be considered muktza. We continue at the top of Chav Zayin Aleph. Gomar b'shulayhu, when the cooking finishes, chazu luhu, they become fit again. And well, everyone eats cooked beans on Yom Tov. We don't say that by the fact that in the interim they were not fit. So this would be an attempt to show that ein muktza l'chatzi Shabbos. Omar le Abaye. Abaye responds. Are you saying that cooking of beans on Yom Tov will settle the question? Ulitameif, according to you, that you categorize the boiling as a stage of being unfit, well then, tikshiloch kederos ti'amo, then a question will arise concerning all cases of cooked food, food on Shabbos, for example. Before Shabbos, so you, as we said, you can eat the beans raw. Shabbos cooking is not something that's allowed. So, at the entrance of Shabbos, you had pots that were boiling hot. Granted, you weren't cooking them up at that point, but because you had started the cooking era of Shabbos. But at the entrance of Shabbos, the pots were boiling hot. You couldn't eat them at that point. The hostam kideros diamo bein hashmoshes roskos hain. When it comes to Shabbos, the majority of pots are boiling hot. And according to your standard, everyone would agree then, according to your standard, that you look at boiling hot pots as something not fit. So then, at the entrance of Shabbos, when the dinim of muktzah are determined, they would be usur. Ulu'urto achlinon minayu, and then later that night, on Shabbos night, we eat from that very food that at the entrance of Shabbos was boiling hot. Now, how can that be? Ela gomro bidei odam lo ka mibay alon. Things that could be finished, that could be completed by man, i.e., the cooking up of food. You determine when the food is cooked. You can control the situation. You can cook up the beans several hours before Shabbos and have everything completed and ready before Shabbos sets in. That kind of situation of gomru bidei adam, where the status is determined by man, by your activities, lo komi b'ayon, that was never a question in the first place. And therefore we say, since the pot, albeit it was very hot at the entrance of Shabbos, but you could have cooked things up earlier before the onset of Shabbos, and it would have cooled off already by the onset of Shabbos, and at the onset of Shabbos it would have been quite edible. That situation isn't a question to begin with. That is certainly mutter, it's certainly allowed. Ki kama bayalon, our question of yesh muktzah l'chatzis Shabbos or not is regarding things gomru b'dei shamayim, things that are dependent on heavenly decisions. For example, will the sun shine or not to dry out the fruits? So things like that you don't have in mind. Rashi uses the expression al yudea chamol, the sun drying out, the cave of the Embiyodu Lasakna, since it's not in your power to rectify, to correct the situation, Masach Daitimine, you put it out of your mind. Therefore, if you, for example, had some raisins or dried figs on the rooftop at the beginning of Shabbos and they were quite edible, but the rain during Shabbos fell on them, swelling them, making them soggy and inedible, at that point, you don't even think about eating them anymore. The fact that the sun shines out later and dries them out again, making them edible again, so that wasn't on your mind. It wasn't something you had control over. That is the basis of our question of yesh muktzah l'chatzis Shabbos or not. In contrast to the case of boiling hot pots, that doesn't figure into our discussion to begin with. So, as you can see, the issue of yesh muktzah l'chatzis Shabbos or not remains unresolved in this particular discussion. At this point, you can see the brackets closes, but we're in the context of a daf yomi shir, so we'll have to pause at this point, realizing that as the Gemara goes on, we return to the issue of checking out Mumin on Yom Tov, which was the issue that we had started before the bracketed section. So before we formally conclude, let us remind you that if you wish to be in touch with us, we can be reached at gmarkings@gmail.com. With that, we conclude our shiur for today.